Okay. Thank you. Just finally, the working group will meet twice during the Nairobi meeting. Our process is that we're meeting twice at each ICANN meeting and roughly twice a month on calls because of time zone differences. So a very reiterative process with no decision being made at one single meeting, allowing the participation of around 30 working group members. The topic comes up for a discussion for an hour on the Tuesday CCNSO agenda, and again is on the agenda for the joint GAC CCNSO session on Tuesday. And there's a link in the presentation to the working group documents. Now today, we're lucky enough to have two ICANN directors who have some specific interests in delegations and re-delegations. So initially, Peter Dengate-Thrush is going to give us his angle on where he thinks the CCNSO might be going, or where the process of delegations and re-delegations might be going. And that will be followed by Mike Silber, who will give us an account of the .za re-delegation as an informational. So thank you very much, both of you, for taking time out of your board workshop this afternoon. And welcome, firstly, Peter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A pleasure to be back amongst friends talking about really the most important issue, I think, that links CCTLD managers and was the reason that I originally became involved, I guess, in ICANN. Although we started off being concerned about trademark issues when the WIPO was doing its tour, we were also watching the formation of ICANN and got involved very quickly when we realised that there was a huge policy gap and some major threats to us as a CCTLD manager. I was involved, as most of you probably know, with .nz. So I started in this as sort of a dyed-in-the-wool adherent to RFC 1591, which most of you will know was co-written by John Postel and Steve Goldstein in 1994. And the next major step in that process, that seemed to work quite well for a long time. Most of us were attracted by the simplicity of it, the ideas that ICANN wouldn't try and declare what was a country and what wasn't. If it was in this list, the ISO 3166 list, we would use that. We're also taken, I think, by the concept of acting as trustees and that the duty to serve the community was the paramount one, that there shouldn't be ownership of intellectual property rights in the database and those sorts of issues. Most of us started our operations under those sorts of principles. So we were all a little concerned when ICANN in 1999 published what it said was a summary of current practice in relation to CCTLD delegation, re-delegation, and most of us thought it was no such thing. It was a little bit like what ICANN called the status quo contract, which sought to dramatically shift the status quo. And I don't think ICP1 has ever been accepted by the CCTLD community as an accurate statement. And one of the key reasons for that was the change in practice in relation to governments. Prior to that, many governments had been unaware of the operation of the CCTLD in their country and certainly didn't pay much attention to it. And ICP1 reflects the changing interest of governments in this as the power of the internet and its ability to serve local communities grew. The next step in the history, I suppose, is the GAC principles, which were dumped on us at the Yokohama meeting from memory in 2002. Chris might be able to remember exactly, 2002, June 2002. And then I think they were rewritten in 2005. So, 2000. Yokohama? Doesn't time fly, yeah, exactly. July of 2000, correct. There you go. Thank goodness there's some other grey hairs in the room that remember these things. So that's where things sat, and the board tended to use those. The GAC principles, I think they eventually were put up in some kind of way. They were never actually adopted by the board as ICANN policy because they weren't made through any policy-making process, nor were they properly issued in terms of advice and adopted by the board as advice. They had a very curious limbo status for a long time, and yet they were the ones that the IANA staff tended to use and tended to cite. The fact of the matter is there hasn't been any apparent catastrophe as a result of the operation. of that, but it left the CCTLD managers feeling a little bit uneasy because of the lack of proper process, the disagreement over some of the issues. So that focus really was some of the things, those issues really were fundamental in driving the formation of the CCNSO. The raison d'etre for the CCNSO was to be the place where this kind of policy was made by CCTLD managers, not by ICANN staff and not by governments. And most of you know that the crucial bylaw relating to the CCNSO is the one that gives the CCNSO the policy to make the rules, to make the policy for the entries in the IANA database about delegation and redelegation. So it's the CCNSO that makes delegation and redelegation policy. Okay, so that's an enormous responsibility. And this working group has taken some time, in my view, to get to this stage. I've wanted the CCNSO to examine how it should exercise this power for a considerable time. I'm delighted that time has now arrived. It's a significant issue. It's not going to be solved by the CCNSO alone, and it's a pleasure to see representatives and friends of governments and other people, because this is going to have to be a reasonably broad consultative approach. Otherwise, the policy, when it comes through the CCNSO, if there hasn't been appropriate consultation, etc., with other interested parties, is going to stall and eventually be blocked by enemies. So you are going to have to work consultatively. You are going to have a solution that works as much as possible for everyone. The issue, of course, is who's in charge. The issue is a simple power issue. Who makes the rules? We used to frame it originally as in relation to a CCTLD manager and IANA. Is IANA's job just to act on the instructions of a CCTLD manager, provided the local community, which may or may not include the government, depending on the rules of that particular territory? Can they just give instructions to IANA, and is IANA obliged to follow them? Or are CCTLD managers effectively franchisees or licensees of IANA and need permission? And who makes those rules? Should there be a difference in treatment for commercial TLVs? Should there be a difference depending on any other aspect of the way the thing is managed? Will one size fit all? Is there going to be a single binding policy, or is there going to be multiplicity of policies depending on any number of factors? So some of the issues that most of you have been grappling with for a long time. So I'm delighted to see the formation of the working group. Congratulate CCNSO on forming it and wish Keith very well in leading it, and close by just suggesting that you have some friends in high places. If Mike and I can be of any help in any way in developing this, let us know, because we'll be available. Thanks, Eve.
Thank you, Peter. And since we're at 1,000 metres in Kenya, I guess we are in a high place, so any friends here are in high places. Do we have a mobile microphone? Do we have a mobile microphone? Before we allow Peter to escape back to his board retreat, are there any questions for him? I see quite a provocative series of statements there, Peter, and I'm sure there'd be a question or two. I'm looking at everybody.
Martin,
thank you. Could you please introduce yourselves just for those on the audio call too?
Okay. Is that actually working?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. I'm Martin Boyle. I'm with Nominet.uk Registry. I'm Martin Boyle. I work with .UK Registry, Nominet. You made a statement about the GAC principles being in limbo and not having been, I think your words were something like, not formally presented to the board.
Not formally adopted by the board. They were formally presented, but never formally adopted.
Right, okay. So why did the board decide that something that was formally presented to it was not going to go through some sort of process in the board?
I don't know, and I challenged board members on that frequently when I was sitting where you are, and I still don't know the answer.
Just behind you, actually.
Sorry, not, Zahid Jamil. I'm from with the a dispute resolution body for the local CCTLD in Pakistan. I'll try. Is that better?
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Thank you. Thank you for that. Zahid Jamil. I'm from Pakistan, and I represent the dispute resolution body for domain names in Pakistan, called the DNDRC. And my question was, and forgive me if I don't know enough about how the CCNSO functions, but would the AOC have any impact on the CCNSO going forward? I'm just wondering, does that have any impact or any changes on the functional relationship of CCTLDs with ICANN at all whatsoever? Thank you.
Was that a question specifically addressed at Peter? Thank you,
Peter. I don't think it does, no. A lot of people have focused heavily on some aspects of the commitments. For example, they pick up on the words being in the public interest and suggest that that's somehow new. Well, I've always regarded the operation of ICANN as being in the public interest. We are a public interest, not a proper corporation. In fact, the structure reflects the public interest. If we weren't operating the public interest, we would lose our tax-free status in California. So there's lots of things like that that have been picked up and put into the affirmation of commitments that people are thinking are new. I think a lot of it's much more about operating in open and transparent ways using fact-based research, which I think the CCNSO has probably always done as well. But it wouldn't be a bad exercise for Keith to go through and make sure that there aren't any procedural or other issues that the affirmation requires.
And Chris wants to make a comment.
I just wanted to say a couple of things about both questions. I agree with Peter. I don't think the affirmation of commitment makes any difference. I do, however, think that the IANA contract may make a difference, and the process by which that is retendered, whatever. May make a difference, because the vast majority of the stuff that we are talking about in respect to delegation, redelegation, and retirement of CCTLDs is actually to do with the IANA and the IANA contract. I just also wanted to mention on Martin's point, I may be wrong about this, Martin, but my recollection is that GAC advice goes to the board as advice, and it's only if the board chooses not to follow it that the bylaws kick in and there is a process. But I don't think there's a requirement for the board to actually accept formally the advice. I may be wrong, but that's my recollection.
And the slight difficulty with that, Chris, is that the GAC principles were sent before that bylaw was actually created. That came about, the treatment of GAC advice came about in about 2002, and the GAC principles.
2006 ones, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, I think this will need to be a last question to you.
Martin Boyle again. Yes, I think you're exactly right, Chris, that there is this thing that the board has to say if it is going to ignore the GAC advice. But the way that Peter put it, I think, was very much more that here is a document in limbo. And that was the bit that I found a bit difficult to accept and understand, because essentially if the board or if the staff and the process are not following those principles, I would have expected the board to have taken note of that and for the process to have kicked in. And I think that really was my surprise about the way the idea had been put.
Okay. I think, well, there is I've noted an issue of clarification of the GAC principles in terms of the ICANN board's understanding of it. Okay. Peter, thank you very much for taking time out of your schedule, and I'd very much like you to stay for the rest of the workshop, but if you do have to run, I'll understand.
I do. We've just got a couple of little issues, like what to do about .XXX, new GTLDs, a few other things that some people seem to think are important. So please excuse me. Good luck with the work. It's very exciting.
Thank you for your time.
But Peter, I thought that was already decided. Watch it, don't watch it, that's your personal preference.
Okay, thank you. And moving right along, we now have a session from Mike Silber from South Africa and also ICANN Board Director. Welcome, Mike. Oh, there is a question?
Just a comment, if I may.
I can. Speak really loudly.
Okay, this is Manel Ismail.
Yes.
It is working, okay. But you need to really shout.
Egypt GAC representative. I was going to... actually, to raise...
Eva Hardy.
I was trying to raise the same comment Martin raised about the GAC principles and how this is interpreted not only by the board but also into the process itself. I mean, we've been through the delegation process of our IGN-CCTLD and I don't feel the process really follows what we've been discussing within the GAC. And I think when things come too national, we have to make sure that information that is requested is really crucial to the delegation. I mean, it's a long list of requirements that are not necessarily... We cannot really interpret how this would help within the delegation process or how this would be evaluated, I mean. And we need to have a concrete list of requirements that is basically clear whether they are just a checklist or subject to evaluation or probably maybe not even needed because, I mean... The process needs to be more well-defined and more clear, even in terms of time frame. I mean, we're targeting maybe the next board meeting. If we miss this, we'll be through the next, because this helps the national planning we're doing. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Some clear points made and noted. Thank you. Welcome, Mike.
Thanks, Keith. I won't ponder any further on the fact that both Peter and Keith live in the same town, support the same rugby team, and now Keith's been tasked with this important piece of work. That being said, my involvement with ICANN initially began precisely around the issue of delegation and redelegation. It was at that stage part of a community, internet community-led initiative in South Africa for the redelegation of the CCTLD from the then manager who was approaching retirement in his day job. He managed the CCTLD as a part-time function. He was approaching retirement and felt that it would be inappropriate either for him to continue as the CCTLD manager or simply hand over to another individual, and therefore was seeking an appropriate replacement. So through the auspices of the Internet Society chapter in South Africa, a drafting team was formed, which I chaired, to look at drafting the structure of a new CCTLD administration for South Africa. And one of the critical issues was then, when we were ready for it, redelegation to the new administrator. That was when I first encountered ICANN, when I, prior to that, encountered the various discussions regarding delegation and redelegation, the RFC, as Peter indicated. We had a rather convoluted arrival, though, at eventually filing our redelegation request, which was the intervention by government into the process. Now, for my part, certainly at the time, I felt it was unwelcome. In retrospect, it certainly added a lot of complexity. Whether it was welcome or unwelcome is irrelevant because the result is almost identical. The major difference we have from the vast majority of CCTLDs out there is that our CCTLD administration is enshrined in legislation. And if any of you are involved in lawmaking or legal interpretation, you'll know that having something tied up in legislation is one of the most frustrating things, because when you get something wrong, the ability to change is severely restricted. So one of the frustrations that we have in being legislated is that minor tweaks that we need in order to improve process would involve a legislative amendment being pushed through Parliament with the sanction of the relevant government department, who aren't that interested in changing laws, and especially chapters that they see as working, because .za is still up and running. And on that basis, we've seen no change, notwithstanding that we've noticed some minor changes that we want. So that's one of the complexities of being legislated. My advice to anybody who in any country is considering legislation is please don't look at South Africa's legislation as a model, because it's a significantly bad model. If you really have to legislate, then my suggestion is to legislate on a very broad stroke of giving responsibility for the administration of the CCTLD to a particular entity and creating that structure and then letting that structure get on with it. What you really don't want to do is now starting to compel that structure to behave in a particular way, which we eventually did to try and enshrine certain principles in the legislation because of a lack of trust that existed at the time. The community didn't believe that government wasn't going to meddle. Government didn't believe that the community was going to continue operations appropriately. But when it came time to submit the redelegation request, we took no chances. We had a look at RFC 1591. We had a look at ICP1. We had a look at the GAC principles, the first iteration, which were then current. And we filed everything that was required in any of those three. And if there was duplication, we obviously didn't duplicate. But if there was any uncertainty between the three, and Keith has touched on the fact that they largely align with some minor and subtle differences. But to the extent that those minor and subtle differences do occur and do exist, we took no chances and simply filed extra documents. One of the easiest things was we had the consent of the previous CCTLD manager, Mike Lowry, who was very willing to sign over on the basis that he felt it was a reasonable compromise. And also he could go into his retirement feeling that there was somebody to manage .za. We had the government who felt that they had obtained a victory, even though it was a negotiated victory where both sides were happy. Government felt comfortable, so they were very happy to sign off on it, and the community were very happy to sign off on it. So we then needed to prove technical competence. We showed community backing through various documents. We showed government backing. We showed the previous manager's backing, and redelegation was a breeze. And that's one comment now, without being willing or able to discuss individual cases since I've joined the board. The one comment I would make is people somehow expect the community to understand their internal processes as well as they do themselves. You know, just because it's been at the top of your mind for the last 6 months or a year or however long your process has taken you, doesn't mean the rest of us know the intricacies of it. File the document. Overfile, oversubmit, overdocument, and give Kim so much information that he can throw half of it out. Because one of the biggest issues that we have when it comes to a board submission is that some of the directors on the board actually do read the board submissions. And if there's a gap, they'll pick it up. And so we've had a number of situations of questions being asked and saves having to be made at the last minute in terms of information that wasn't submitted fully enough for us to actually have made a correct decision. And all I can say is, and I would encourage, is whatever the final result of this work group is, overfile, oversubmit, submit more rather than less. You know, in my view, there is no such thing as too much transparency except in my bathroom, and there is no such thing as too much information.
Thank you, Mike. Just an observation and then a question. Peter Dingay Thrash and myself do live in the same town, but it's entirely coincidental that I end up being the chair of this working group. This working group was established by the CCNSO and went through a nomination process from the working group to select the chair with Peter's total uninvolvement. The question I have, there's a number of useful lines that come through your discussion, but essentially it's a friendly redelegation with all parties happy, legislation not being the path to go down. But how long did it take in terms of the ICANN process for you from start to finish, and was that a satisfactory timeline to achieve the goal in the overall scheme of things?
Keith, if I recall correctly, I think the from submission to redelegation was somewhere in the vicinity of a month and a half or 2 months. So somewhere in that vicinity. Now, given that the drafting team that initially started looking at restructuring.za happened or was formed in 1998, and given that we only submitted our redelegation request to ICANN in 2003, in the context of the process that we'd been through, a month and a half was more than reasonable. If it was 2 months or 3 months, or even if it was 6 months, but it wasn't, it would have been more than reasonable because we'd been going through our own processes. And, you know, that's one thing I certainly would agree with the Egyptian GAC representative, that some proper timelines, some appropriate structures and full information from an ICANN perspective would be very helpful, just so that you can plan rather than because there's a specific urgency that's involved. I would agree with that, but certainly my personal experience was that the timing wasn't an issue, and we managed to get timing that was very conducive and very appropriate for our needs, largely because we'd been working with the IANA staff, as it then was, for a considerable amount of time before that. You know, we'd discussed initially an unfriendly redelegation and the processes that we would have had to go through. We sat at that stage with the South African GAC representative where, you know, we would have meetings with the IANA staff one after the other, where we knew that we were meeting with the IANA staff and we both knew what the other one was talking about, namely an unfriendly redelegation and how to start or stop and all the rest. So we'd been through the processes. We knew what was required. We'd been through the tough times. And so when it came to a relatively friendly redelegation, it just went as smoothly as anything because there'd been all that communication for years before that.
Thank you, Mike. There's a question over here. If we run.
So again, this is Manel, Egyptian GAC representative. Okay, I really agree with what has been said regarding the time plan and the time frame, and the process needs to be informative both ways. I mean, we need to receive information on even the progress, because I think it's more of a data gathering phase that's informative only one way. And I tend to disagree with what has been said on providing, I can't remember exactly the term, but as much as information as you can. I mean, I really think it should be something to the point as far as it is a straightforward case. I mean, unless we have a disputed redelegation or even disputed delegation, then the process should be simple, easy, and to the point. And you should be able to strike through whatever steps that has been achieved. You cannot just keep providing information. Let me give you just a small example. Why should I report on internet usage within the country? I mean, how would this help in the delegation?
if I could respond to that, and I think Keith wants to move along. My key issue is the relatively difficult to quantify test of support of the local community. How do you prove support of the local community? And in my view, the one key element is some sort of document from government saying that they're happy with the delegation to that entity is useful but not necessarily binding. Having various non-government organizations providing similar documents are also incredibly useful. But I think sometimes what's even more useful is a brief memo explaining the process that's been followed, because different countries, different delegations and redelegations have followed different routes and processes. And a brief memo saying, this is what happened in this year, why, what happened, how it happened, what the decision was, what the consultation was. I'm not suggesting that you now have to ask every citizen to sign some sort of petition for the redelegation of a CTTLD, but rather explaining who's supporting and what process was used to derive that support.
Two very quick comments, and I promise I won't ask for the floor again. But I mean, the process cannot ask for minutes of meeting. I mean, this is too much to ask for. The other thing is that the vagueness in the process should not be pushed to the applicant. I mean, already the term community support is a vague term. So now we are in the process of proving that this is our community and that those letters represent all the community. I mean, it's to our side now to define what's the local community.
Okay, thank you. Good point noted. I've got Martin first and then back to you. So can you pass it out? Thank you. And just before Martin speak, the working group was reminded in a recent discussion of the Pitcairn Island redelegation, where the entire population of the country finally agreed to the redelegation, all 94 of them. Martin.
Martin Boyle from Nominus again. Really, my point is very much along the same lines as Manal's, but it actually goes on to the board and your comments, Mike, that in what I assume is a significant number of cases, after the staff have done their work, the board considers that they have not done enough and sends that back to them to get more information. And I think that perhaps is a little bit along the same lines as Manal, that there is an uncertainty about what evidence is being requested. And that, I'm afraid, actually gives me quite a serious level of concern if the board is having to go back to its experts and say, you haven't provided enough information. Is there any way for the board to try and get to a point of more clarity as to what it requires as the tests that allow it to treat what is essentially quite a subjective question?
Martin, I think it's actually the function of this working group to do that, because at the moment our experts don't come back to us and say every tick box has been ticked, we're totally satisfied, and the board throws things back at them. Our experts tend to do a very good job of raising flags, which if board members read carefully enough, they pick up, where the IANA staff may pick up an issue where they don't feel there's been possibly enough evidence, they're not sure if that should be used to hold up or not. It goes to the board, and the board will pick up any hint or any hesitancy within the IANA staff. So it's generally not that the staff aren't doing their job. It's also not that the board aren't doing their job. I think it's to some extent because the tests are relatively subjective. When I took responsibility for the redelegation of .za, I was taking no risk because it was politically sensitive. We negotiated a resolution which could have potentially been undone by delays or allegations of inconsistency or inadequacy of. So I took no risk. It was that important to me that I decided to overprove rather than underprove. Now, if people are that confident with their redelegation, my view is, well, provide them minutes of meetings if they're going to help you show something. If they are of limited use, well, I don't think the IANA staff are going to enjoy reading through 500 pages of minutes just to pull that through. It was that important to me that I was willing to expose whatever was required. The fact that I could attach legislation was also pretty useful.
Okay. And one final question, I think, Mike.
Yes. First of all, let me say, Mike, I think that's very good advice from the point of view of saying oversubmit so that you don't have to keep coming back and answer questions. So I, for one, would say that that's a good comment. With regard to quantity and quality, I think it's difficult to checklist that. I appreciate that because it has a community impact, a very serious community impact. So it's not just one sort of registry that is being impacted. For instance, the whole community that is relying upon that CCTLD. So I would say that getting or asking for minutes and other real data about community consultation would be a very, very important issue, and it should be highlighted. I'll give an example of how, somewhere I'm from, a consultation is termed a consultation. You get notice in the press a day before, and you have to fly from all over the country to one location. If you manage to see that, be there, then you're broken up into five different groups so that you don't actually speak to each other, and you're isolated into different sort of, you're a lawyer or you're a banker. And on that basis, then they come up with, this is a group leader, comes up with a minutes of whatever was discussed, and then the government decides what the result was. And that is termed a consultation. And so I think that it's very important that we need to be extremely transparent, and then I don't think minutes are a tall order. You just provide them. Why wouldn't you? Thank you.
Thank you. Comments noted, and thank you for your input. Thank you, Mike, for your attendance here today. While we'd love you to stay, we'd understand if you have to draw yourself away to the trivia of the ICANN boards.
Unlike Peter, I won't be going back to the board workshop to deal with Triple X.
Thank you very much. Our next little session is from Becky Burr, who is going to give us a bit of a background in terms of IANA history, having been someone who was on the spot through pre-IANA days through to the NTIA contract. And okay. I guess nobody in this room could be that old. Thank you. Becky.
Thanks. One of the tasks that the working group is doing is trying to get our hands around and really understanding the flow of authority with respect to delegation of CCTLDs, where it comes from and how it's evolved. So we are still in the information gathering stages, and there are lots of details to fill in. But just to sort of put this in perspective, I'm going to give a very brief sense of where the various contracting responsibilities lay. Beginning in the 1960s, the U.S. Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency had a contract first with UCLA, University of Southern California, University of California, Los Angeles, and then with USC, which was really following John Postel from one institution to another to provide a bundle of services that were unnamed for quite a while, but basically maintaining a list of the host names and addresses and eventually grew to include responsibility for allocation of parameter, names, IP addresses, port numbers, and the like, policy on address registering, guidance on TLD allocation and root server systems, and editing and publishing the various assigned parameters. This went on in an unnamed function under a contract between DARPA and the university, a contract known as the Terranode Technology Network Agreement. In 1983, John Postel and Paul McPetris developed the DNS as we know it now, the easier-to-use, more friendly names. Worked out a few of the more details with respect to top-level domains. In 1985, John delegated .us, .uk, and .il, and he was operating then until 1993 on a frankly first-come, first-serve, whoever asks for the job gets it. It was a largely very homogeneous academic technical community, so it tended to be delegations to individuals in universities in various countries. In 1994, for the first time, there are some policies that predate 1591 and that reference allocation of CCTLDs, but the first sort of focused statement on delegation of CCTLDs came in 1994 with 1591. That is, according to the ICANN postings, the policy under which CCTLDs are delegated and redelegated today. In 1998, and this is where the contractual authority becomes a little confusing. In 1998, after the U.S. government recognized ICANN, there was an assumption that ICANN was going to take on the functions the IANA functions from the University of Southern California as part of the process. So in 1998, ICANN and USC signed a transition agreement in which USC transferred the functions and licensed various intellectual property that had been developed to ICANN. So ICANN began doing those responsibilities in 1998. The problem was because USC's work had been done under a contract with the U.S. government, USC felt constrained in what it could actually transfer. And it did not feel that it could transfer the intellectual property developed under the Terranode contract without a direction and a release and a substitute contract from the U.S. government. So in 2000, the U.S. government put together the IANA functions contract. We now treat those things as very separate and distinct. They were not in the pre-ICANN days, nor in the early days of ICANN. I think it's just important to understand at some point that the IANA functions contract is an artifact of legal constraints that we found ourselves operating under in the creation of ICANN and the need to have some legal instrument in place when the responsibilities were transferred to IANA. And I think that is something that often gets lost in the translation, and I think is important and something that we will be looking at. I just want to talk a little bit about the 1591 principles. Those are the principles that, based on ICANN's website, it says ICP-1 is a restatement of RFC 1591, but is not intended to change policy. So, and in these cases, while there are differences in names, the principles don't change. And these were John Postel's principles, what he was thinking about when he was delegating CCTLDs, largely to his friends. People he knew and people who were trusted managers in the space. So the basic responsibilities was that managers had to be able to do an equitable, just, honest, and competent job. Managers would be viewed as trustees for the delegated domain with a duty to serve the community. 1591 specifically says that concerns about rights and ownerships of domains are inappropriate. Rather, managers should consider their responsibilities and their obligations with respect to service to the community. There was a requirement that the manager would be equitable to all groups in the domain that request domain names. It's fine to say you have to be a corporation, registered in, you know, this country, but if you are permitting a certain group of registrants, you have to treat them fairly. Significantly interested parties in the domain should agree that the designated manager is the appropriate party. That encompasses significantly interested parties, includes governments, it includes anybody who has an interest in it, but it definitely includes governments and has been intended from the beginning to say that governments are among those parties that have a important role in deciding who manages the CCTLD, and the manager has to do a satisfactory job. You have to be competent, basically. And those are the principles in 1591, and it wasn't particularly more complicated than that. The notion was that there could be as wide a variety of operations managements and organization managements within a CCTLD as there were CCTLDs. That would be left up to the relevant community to decide what kind of model they wanted to follow. The other thing that's important about 1591, and this is actually one of the very last conversations I ever had with John Postel, was about this exactly. It's sort of, what were you thinking about when you came up with 1591? And, well, that's the last slide. Oh, did you? Yeah, go to the next one. And he said, basically, I never wanted to decide what was a country and what wasn't a country. And that's why he selected, and I don't think he was alone, he had other people working with it, the ISO 3166-1 list as an authoritative list. It may have been the wrong list to choose, but there are a million different ways in which it could have been second-guessed, but the point was, pick a list and stick to the list, because otherwise you will drive yourself crazy. And I have to say, that was one of the smartest things that he did, in my view, and straying from the, you know, picking a list and sticking to that list is a very dangerous, it just leads you down a path the end of which you don't know. He also never wanted to have to determine who was or was not the legitimate government of a country. And there are examples in the CC allocation annals where, you know, one part of a government claimed that it had the right to determine this, and another disputed that. And John's view was you leave that to internal government processes, and whatever processes are in place within that country should rule. And when the country got it figured out, they could come to IANA and tell them what the right answer was. But it was not IANA's job to pick and choose among government representatives. And the final principle was that he didn't want to have to really resolve disputes about who got to run a CCTLD. And that is why he required in 1591 that there be a contact in country. And the theory was if the government really didn't like the way the domain was being operated, they could invoke their own laws and their own rules and procedures to resolve the issue and then come to IANA with the with the consent, with the support of the in-country manager who was, after all, subject to those laws to resolve those disputes. So this is just the sort of real quick, here's where we think we started. We're still looking for documents and to fill it out, but those are the basics.
Thank you very much, Becky, and extraordinarily useful to remind us all there's more than the words in the document, the carefully considered principles upon which 1591 was based. So thanks for that. Are there any questions for Becky? Any questions from online? Okay, thank you very much, Becky. Our penultimate presentation this afternoon is Chris Despain, who is not wearing his CCNSO chair's hat at this point, but speaking about the .au redelegation, which I think, as opposed to the .za redelegation, could be termed be closer to hostile than friendly.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Keith. And thank you for that fantastic introduction, placing me completely on the spot. Yes, I am wearing my .au hat. I'm going to talk about a lot of the things I'm going to say are covered by the points that people have made about the way things should be done. I'm going to talk about the way that it was done in Australia. I just want to insert a disclaimer: nothing I say should be taken as a criticism in any way of any person either alive or dead, even if they're in this room, Kim. The problem with the .au redelegation is something that happens to me a lot, because people say to me, so basically the .au redelegation was a contested redelegation or a hostile redelegation. And in fact, I don't see it quite that way. It is an example, perhaps, of why, despite what Martin and Manal have quite correctly said about the importance of having clear statements of what needs to happen step by step, sometimes a little bit of flexibility is worth having in the system, because it enables things to happen. Now, and I obviously believe they should happen, otherwise I wouldn't be sitting here. But for me, the experience, and I am unable, in fact, to explain to anybody the basis upon which .au was redelegated, really. I mean, the documentation is there, but there is no real explanation as to why it was redelegated in the end. I think that the best that can be said is that Robert Ells, the incumbent CCTLD manager, ceased to communicate, and that therefore it was felt that the redelegation was acceptable. But the lessons that I've taken out of this, out of the redelegation, and I really was fascinated. I mean, Becky's explanation of 1591 is really, really valuable and important. In my sort of shorthand, the three steps were incumbent consent, government buy-in, and local internet community support. And local internet community support is a real challenge. because no one has the faintest idea what it actually means. At one point, we were in, I had a meeting with Robert Ells at which I said to him, Robert, what will it take for you to consent to AUDA taking the delegation? And he said, well, you know, I think you're doing okay, but what I think is lacking is the community support. And I said, fine, not a problem. What about if I go and get ISOC AU and the ISPs and all of those sorts of people to say that they, and existing domain name holders perhaps, not all of them obviously, to say that they believe that this should happen. And Robert's response was, no, that's not what I meant. I meant the community. And that includes even those people who haven't heard about the internet yet. So at that point, I decided that it was going to be quite challenging to satisfy that particular requirement. I suppose the other problem with local internet community is, and I think Manal's point's a very valid one, is that is because we don't know what it means, it's actually very difficult for, especially for governments where there is a, it's a government-controlled CCTLD, and it's a redelegation perhaps from one department to another or something like that. They would, a lot of governments would say, well, we represent the local internet community, and therefore we should, and I don't necessarily agree with it, but that's what they would say. And so it becomes very challenging. But having said all of that, the concept of having a very, very rigid, so rigid that there's no wriggle room at all, I think is actually quite dangerous. It makes it very, very difficult. I've been saying for a very long time to anyone who will listen to me that the fundamental point is, it seems to me, is this, and I do not understand why ICANN doesn't say it, and Becky's already said it. If a government wants to redelegate or wants the CCTLD to be redelegated, it is open to them to legislate that that is what should occur. Now, it's also open to the people in the country to object to that and to sue and do whatever it is that they choose to do. But fundamentally, if we as CCTLD managers constantly claim, as we do, quite rightly, that a CCTLD is sovereign, then that is the fundamental point of that is that it must be, by all that's logical, subject to the legislation in the country concerned. And not that I'm not suggesting that every government should be told to go away and pass an act, and as Mike Silber has quite rightly pointed out, once you do that, it's actually quite challenging because you then have the rules laid down in legislation. But I just think that working on this working group has been a fascinating experience, and we've got a long way to go. I didn't want to say anything while Peter was in the room to disillusion him. He seems to think that this working group is going to lead to a brand spanking new policy, and I can pretty much guarantee you that ain't going to happen. I'm much more interested in hearing other people's experiences than talking about Australia. I'm happy to answer any questions, but I suppose my key point is I find it hard to fit it into almost any of the other delegations and redelegations that have occurred because it wasn't dealt with in the same way.
Thank you, Chris. Just one question for me. In terms of the timing of the process, given that there's a lot of things that happen outside of ICANN and so on, how long did the actual ICANN process take?
It was an awfully long time ago. Can you remember, Kim, how long the IANA process took for .au? Once we actually got the papers in, it didn't take very long at all, I don't think.
I think it was, relatively quick. Bearing in mind that was the first time ICANN was contracted.
That's correct.
Complicated.
Yeah, it took straight into the end. That's
all
it.
Right.
So, yes, the contract, yes, I mean, that was an issue, of course, that we were dealing with a forming ICANN, and so, therefore, there were a lot of hard things to deal with on the way through.
Yeah, the .au request, as I understand it, was the first redelegation request that ICANN processed that hadn't started before ICANN existed. So it was a few that were done in that period, but they were started in John Postel's time.
Yeah.
And it was still relatively quick, I think, you're saying.
Once we got through the point of understanding that we weren't going to get Robert to agree to anything, and we just went ahead with the request because we had government support and so on, once it got to that point, the IANA process was quick, yes.
Can I just add to a comment you made earlier? About legislation, I think that is actually a point that we do make. We make it very clear in our processing today that we expect the operator to be in the country, to be bound under local law, and also as part of our evaluation to check whether there is governing legislation. And it's something that we ask. We ask, is there a law that governs the CC utility operation? And that, you know, that's reflected in our report as to whether, you know, if a government expresses an opinion, is that an opinion based on some power they conferred under law as opposed to an opinion? And obviously, they're a very important stakeholder in the local community, so the government's opinion is going to be important either way, but if there is specific legislation on the books that appoints a certain organisation to run a CC2LD, that would obviously be a very important factor in consideration.
Sure. Okay, thanks, Chris. Other questions? I think there's one, two.
Thank you. Interesting point about legislation. We heard that in one of the recommendations was to try and avoid it, the other was a very important factor. And to give you an example, certain countries have the power of an ordinance which is issued by the president, who could be not an elected representative, could be a military dictator, for instance. But it's legislation.
Yep.
I'll give you an example of certain, and in my country, been in existence since 1960, had no support from the local community. Number one, what impact would that have? What evaluation would you do in that respect, one? Two, what status or importance would you give to local community objection to something like that, because they couldn't get into the process and even try to stop it?
But again, you're going back to Becky's point, Becky's very strong point that she made on John's behalf, which is it's not ICANN's job to do that. If the legislation is the legislation, it doesn't matter whether it's as you said, it's a military dictatorship or it's a whatever. It's I know this is often a hard pill to swallow, but you cannot, on the one hand, expect ICANN to operate on the basis that a CCTLD is sovereign, and we have all the rights that flow from that, and we sit here and pay whatever we choose to pay for contributions and all of that stuff, on the one hand. But on the other hand, to say that if there is legislation and the local community doesn't like it, ICANN should find some way of interfering.
No, so can I just one response? The second part of my question was, what importance would you give to local community opposition to something like that?
Check, 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 check.
Yeah, I don't know. Okay, I've got Manal and then Eberhard for question, and then Becky.
I just wanted to respond. I think it's really important to understand that the point was not for IANA to look at the laws and figure out what the laws of some country says. That's not what IANA is equipped to do. The point was, if there is a law in the country that applies, the government in that country has the ability to enforce that law in a way that this comes to IANA as a consensual done deal. And I think that's a really important distinction.
Okay, thanks, Becky. Manal.
Okay, I know I'm breaking my promise not to ask for the floor again.
your contributions have been most useful, so otherwise I might be seeking to catch you short, but no, please.
I just don't want to be misunderstood for promoting a rigid model. I mean, in fact, I'm asking for flexibility.
Yes.
The current model, in my opinion, is based on one size fits all, and it's based on the very worst case scenario. So all applications has to go through the very worst case scenario.
Yes.
And here is where flexibility is really needed.
So. Okay, thank you.
And the other thing is that government, I'm not promoting that government should be speaking on behalf of everyone else. And I mean, local community support should be submitted, but then since we don't have a concrete definition, we shouldn't be trying to make sure that we define it.
Accepted, yes, thank you. Eberhard.
Eduard Lisse from .na. I'm a member of this group, so not all of this will come as a surprise to the people sitting on the panel. First of all, the 1591, where it says that significant parties should have a say in who is the designated manager, it's clearly stated in a new delegation. It's not in, it's not concerned the incumbent. Secondly, if my, my understanding was so that Robert Elk in the end signed the paper or consented to the delegation. That was my understanding. In the end, I had the understanding he washed his hands of it. Anyway, as I have said in the group before, I do not really understand what authority or where I can, IANA, actually take the authority to deal with CCTLD against the wishes of the incumbent. And I, you know, I usually chose another word, but which I don't want to become too confusing. This is in particular for the ones that were registered before 1591, before ICANN. She mentioned .il was in 85, .za in 1990. I recently read the narrative from Mike Lowry about .za when I was looking for our history project. Postel was not involved in these early things. IANA didn't exist, but he wasn't involved. So I'm really wondering what actual authority IANA or ICANN has to deal with this over the objections of the incumbent. I'm very happy with local legislation. It doesn't matter whether it's an order in council or an order by dictator or a putsch in Bolivia or whatever. In the end, who has the biggest gun will win, whether it's a democracy or not. But once there is significant will of government in one or other form, the local incumbent will have to submit in one or other way. And I mean, the Namibian government has passed an act which is a verbatim copy of the South African Act, including typing errors, removing the, any broad representation clauses. And the day after it's going to be activated, it's gazetted but not yet activated, the day after it's going to be activated, it's going to get an injunction and it's going to be deactivated again until this has been gone through the court. However, if in the end the Namibian court decides that's the way it is, there's nothing I can do and will do, other than that I will still safeguard my property. And Becky was Peter was wrong in saying that there should be no intellectual or other property resort in the databases. It's clearly never stated. It should not be in the domain. And that's a GAC principle. Intellectual property, copyright, is legislated in each country and it depends on each country differently whether a database is copyrightable and under what. In South Africa it has, in Australia it has a sui generis right, in other countries it doesn't. So these are separate issues. They may affect security and safety and stability of the Internet, and they complicate the issues much more than whether we find a way of helping the Egypt government to redelegate their domain.
Okay, thank you, Eberhard. I think that was a series of observations rather than questions. And I think, thank you, Chris, for your time. And our final,
yes, Becky.
But Becky made her observation, I think, at the time.
I can wait for that.
Okay.
I don't disagree.
Okay, and our final speaker this afternoon is Abibu from Tanzania, and I hope I got that pronunciation right. Welcome, Abibu.
Thank you, Keith, for inviting me. Actually, I got an invitation day before yesterday. It was copied to my colleague from Nigeria, so I realized that she had not responded, so I volunteered just to speak something. Not because that .gz has been redelegated to TISNI, of which I'm manager of, but just to share experience and what is happening within the African continent. So how we understood the redelegation in Tanzania is we took it as analog to the exam, only that in schools or colleges, the exams have are closed. But for redelegation, it's such as an open exam. You can do it repetitively and it's the same paper because they are the same requirements. But at the schools, if you fail an exam, then you repeat maybe another difficult one, contrary to the previous one. So with the re-delegation, you have a chance to repeat the same exam, and you can decide when to do it. That's it, when you are prepared. That's how we understood it. And so with the re-delegation, there is no failure. It's only that delay the pass. That's what we understood. With that understanding, so basically the challenge here is how to go through the process. And the best process is to take a long time, but do one sitting, and then you pass the exam. That is the good process, we think. And in Africa, most of the countries, I can't mention anyone, I have the experience, I know them, they would like to go for the exams before getting prepared, and that's why they end up into problems and trying complaining maybe of the whole process. Now, for the case of Tanzania, it's almost about 5 years now since the initiative started. It was in 2005, and this was facilitated by the regulator, by the government through the regulator, and that's why most of the some of the African countries perceive that .TZ is managed by the government, but in fact it's not the government. There is a separate entity which was established in 2006 through PPP, and this involved all stakeholders, but still there is a challenge. They have, some of the presenters have presented that to have 100% local internet community representation is a bit a challenge because some of the people do not, especially in Africa, do not even realize the benefit of internet for the time being. So the company to, intended to take over the management of .TZ was established in 2006, but the secretariat was recruited in 2008, in March. So basically the technical issues were dealt from March 2008, and by August last year, we managed to successfully take over the domain registration responsibilities from the previous registrars. And we initiated the delegation in October last year. And by December last year, we were through with the process. And basically, we are waiting for IANA report so that the ICANN board can give its recommendations. So in essence, I keep on requesting my colleagues whenever we meet in various meetings that to do their homework. Take even 5 years to do your homework so that once you request for a delegation, then at the first sitting to go through. That's all I can share. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And so yeah, there were two separate applications to ICANN, 2006. You made an application to IANA in 2006? Oh, 2009. Okay. So all the previous work was just in-country work. Okay, thank you. Okay, questions. Just being... aware of the time, we have 5 minutes until we have to vacate this room.
What is the position of the incumbent, the current registrant? Is this a contested re-delegation or is he in favour?
We hope it is in favour because you haven't got any queries. You have submitted whatever information have been requested, and We have been advised that the IANA are going through with the full report. Or maybe I didn't get your question.
No, the current manager of .DZ, is he on board or is he opposing this, your application? That's what I'm asking.
Okay. I think there's a comment coming from the back.
I didn't get your question. Maybe... Very positive. They are very positive, yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much. My name is Howie from Kenya.
Speak up, please.
Howie from Kenya. Okay. I see you presented a scenario, but I'm wondering what are the challenges, because I'm seeing there's a lot of disconnection between the community level participation and the government process. Because we are talking about putting up domain names for a public institution or an NGO, it takes a long process in Kenya, for example. And we find that the people in the community also do not understand what you're talking about. So the challenge is that in Africa, we are seeing that it's only a clique of people who are aware about what is going on. How are you dealing with that kind of a situation right now?
The local internet community involvement, as I said, is really challenging. And it's a continuous process. And this comes through involvement in the board of the entity managing the CCTLD. So if you have open membership, then the local community involvement will get on improving. That's my understanding. And even the board membership to the TISNIC board is still open.
Another.
Hi. I had a question about, basically this is a question to the panel and a reaction to what I've heard this afternoon. I'm representing the Philippines in the GAC, and we are, the intention is for us to proceed with a redelegation of our CCTLD, which for some time now has managed the domain of the Philippines, even the government domain and the military domain of the country. And so the process for us to take is not very clear in terms of who do we go to and who do we talk to. And I think this was one of the concerns that was raised earlier in terms of the structure and the timeline from ICANN in terms of how a country who wishes to proceed be guided on such procedures. And so this is basically a comment and question that other people in the room may have quite a response to. Thank you.
Okay, noted, and perhaps we can talk after the workshop. Is there any final burning issue or observation from anywhere?
My name is Nilal Himam. I'm from Indonesia. Currently, we have a situation where the CCTLD is managed by Budi Raharjo. He's from the from academic, and there was a dispute between him and I think the other entities that manage the CCTLD, and. Right now, after the dispute, the government take over for a while, and then we give the operation, basically the register the operation to the an NGO based on several internal communities. And currently, the current holder of CCTLD, Budi, is trying to really redelegate the CCTLD to the government. Okay, so there is the situation right now where the current registry operate without basically underlying mandate. So they just have it from the government as like a letter. Concerning that they are now the one who manage the second level domain, basically, not the top level domain. I tend to agree with several of our colleagues from the Egypt and from the Philippines. Like there are a lot of issues with the delegation where there's not really a clear procedure or steps for this kind of redelegation, especially for one who. Like for example, like in our country case, Indonesia, where the current holder of the mandate is giving it to the government, but still the government has to provide with all the necessary requirements such as...
I understand. I have a suggested solution for you. Well,
okay.
Not a solution, but a suggested way forward. And for the lady from the Philippines as well. Sometimes this is quite challenging because it's very difficult for the ICANN staff to discuss the intricacies of a redelegation with you, but there are a significant number of people involved in the CCNSO who have a reasonable amount of experience in these things, some of whom you've heard from today. We're happy to talk to anybody. We'll even talk to you if you're from government. So if you would like to seek to have a brief chat with me afterwards, and we'll arrange a time to just talk, and maybe we can give you some pointers and some help about what it is that you might need to do. We never take sides, so if you're involved in a delegation that might be contested delegation or whatever, we're never going to take sides, but what we will do is provide the same information to everybody so you have as much information as you can. So I'll happily meet you outside and we can have a chat, all right?
Thank you, Chris. And thank you. Abibu, thank you very much for your thought-provoking presentation too. Thank you. And now I think we're past our allotted time, so I'd like to thank everybody for coming along today and taking such a strong interest in the subject. And I think quite unusually for an ICANN after lunch meeting, we've ended up with a room fuller at the end of the session than it started. So thank you very much for your attention. And if you do have any issues relating to delegations and redelegations that you think might be of interest to the working group, please either talk to a working group member or to me. Thank you very much.